This is Ryan Wace from Bat, and we'll see you at the Tampa Morgue.
What's up? This is Tony, and you're listening to the Tampa Morgue, episode number 43. And as always, I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Ed Webb. What's up, dude?
Mr. Anderson, what's going on, brother?
Not much, man. Just hanging out again. We've had a busy week here on the Tampa Morgue. And really fast, Ed, before we start, we have an awesome guest tonight that we're looking forward to talking to. So we can announce now, you guys, the Maryland Death Fest, right? You're going to be playing at in like 2 weeks.
We are. We got added to it. Defleshed had to drop off. So they asked Monstrosity to step in, and we're doing it. We're playing the power plant this time. Last time we played the Edison lot, now we're playing the power plant. So should be killer. I'm excited.
There you go, man. So yeah, we're going to announce that last episode, but we couldn't, but it is official now. And so we're going to start the show. The track we opened up with tonight was Right for Exorcism from the Under the Crooked Claw album. That's going to be out May 17th on Nuclear Blast. And we are joined tonight by... He's a vocalist, guitarist, bassist, vinyl junkie, horror fiend, and a future filmmaker, Mr. Ryan Wace. What's up, dude?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on, man. So before we start getting into your background, I do have to ask, the Right for Exorcism, that's from the new record, that is taken from Exorcist 3, that quote?
Yeah, you see it in a book, and I was like, that's a song title right there. And I wanted to basically reverse the exorcism and make the girl be into it. You know, it's not based on the movie, but the title is definitely from the movie. And I wanted to, it's funny, I didn't think three Exorcist remakes were going to come out in between me writing this song and then the video coming out. But we try to do things a little different. Got with Norman Cabrera and did some cool creature effects with the help of Noah Rivers, and got a cool face melt at the end of that video. I'm sure you've seen it by now.
Yeah, it's definitely a killer video, and we're gonna talk about that too. And really fast, I know you just got back from South America with Exciter. How was that tour for you guys?
It was killer, man. I mean, it's a lot of travel. You know, you're flying every night and then playing with not a lot of sleep. And the 2-3 pieces get along really well, and you know, everyone was troopers on the tour, and just to play in Brazil and Bogota and down there, even Argentina, it just makes it all worth it, man, because the people are the most passionate anywhere in the world for heavy metal. And I think if you guys have been there, you know the ticket.
And you guys, so Bat, you guys have a busy, you know, you're pretty much, what, this week, you're pretty much chilling, getting shit done. You know, you're doing a lot of press and stuff. We talked
I'm
about
not
that off the
chilling.
show. Not chilling. Yeah, doing a lot of press. Aren't you flying out to Los Angeles too?
No, well, I already did that, but that was for some film stuff if you want to get into that later. But no, Waste is playing Milwaukee Metal Fest this week. So me and Nick are driving out. We got a kind of a stage setup that Nick Polis, who's also in Bat, made these killer barrels that kind of have like Return of the Living Dead type skeletons coming out of them. And we got light up cabs. So we're bringing all that stuff in a van out to Milwaukee Metal Fest, which is basically our stage setup, playing that, playing Pittsburgh, then coming home for 5 days, and then Bat goes on a month-long tour with Necrod. So it's pretty wall to wall the rest of the summer for us.
And the Necrod, that's June 5th till June 27th.
Yeah, but it starts on the East, excuse me, we're from the East Coast, starts on the West Coast, so we're playing four gigs on the way out. Bat's doing like St. Louis, Omaha, Denver, Salt Lake, and then it starts in Oakland. So yeah, we start on the 29th of May and starts with Necron on the 5th of June.
Okay, cool, Ben. Yeah, so we want to start out actually talk a little bit about your background and stuff. I know, so you grew up in Virginia Beach.
Correct. And I got the hell out of there as soon as I was 18. Moved
So
to Richmond.
Richmond. Yeah, you went to Richmond about 26 years now, 25 years.
25 years, yeah, 98, I moved up here.
Okay. And just as a kid, man, you know, not even musically, but growing up in Virginia Beach, what were some of the memories you have back then?
Well, it's kind of a, you know, it's like a military town, tourist town, shithead, burnout town on, you know, all mixed together. And I just wanted to play music. You know, I got a bass when I was 13 and couldn't really find people to play with. I ended up playing with a guy who became a heroin addict, and we would jam and he would shoot up dope and we would drive around when I was 16, and it seemed normal to me, you know. And I just couldn't get, you know, the second half of a band together. So I basically just yearned to play music, and I'd heard a lot of good things about Richmond. And so the minute I was 18, I moved up here, and it was just a world of difference with the arts and music. And just from like a party kind of beach town to like a more inner city vibe, that people that actually wanted to get shit done, it was a huge difference. So I've been here ever since.
And you've been a fan, like you've been into creative writing and stuff like that. Your mom was a teacher?
Correct. Yeah. My mom, you know, read to me a lot when I was growing up, me and my older brother, and that kind of resonated with me. And I take after her for sure. Like, you know, I was doing all types of crazy shit in high school, but I still kind of had that urge that to write. And just, I think it kind of led to like writing lyrics and stuff too. But I mean, now writing this script that I've talked about a few times, it really let that kind of yearning kind of see the light of day, I guess. You know, I'm still writing about heavy metal, but you know, putting it in a cinematic format.
You and I've heard you say before that writing lyrics for you is actually easier than writing riffs.
I think I just said that in an interview. I mean, they go hand in hand, but I just get inspired with that especially. It's just basically writing short horror stories, and the stuff I've written for Waste has kind of been the same thing too, lyrically. But it's just you know, when you're inspired and you're excited, it just kind of rolls out like that. You know, I'm not saying anything's easy, but it's definitely it's better than a desk job writing about bats flying around killing people.
Definitely. And you know, and one thing that I was able, I'm sure Ed can actually relate to, is because I haven't heard anybody say this in a while. So you used to rent cassettes, which I used to do too, from the public library at like 11 and 12 years old.
Yeah, me and my brother did that, and we'd go home and tape them, and that was, you know, a way just to check stuff out, because we didn't have money to really to buy, you know, records and tapes back then. So we'd rent them, make sure we liked them, and then we'd save up and, you know, buy them from whatever tower at the time, record stores. And I still got all my cassettes, man. I still got a lot of my mixtapes too, man. I like nothing's changed, man. I'm into the same shit I was, you know, as a little kid. Except it's easier to find stuff now, you know. And I travel a lot and like to buy stuff in the wild. So I still go to record stores, and just it's real therapeutic for me. I mean, you can see behind me there's wall
Yeah,
to wall. Oh, there's my finger, yeah, wall to wall.
you have an insane collection, man. And you know, and the
Cassettes
thing
and
is,
LPs.
you know, Ed will tell you, I have a shitload of stuff, but when I see your collection, man, it's pretty insane. I've seen some of the, you know, some, and I've only seen a part of it.
Yeah. And it's always growing. And I talk about doing my talk show, the Living Fast talk show again. And it's, you know, it's only evolved than I've ever, you know, yeah, like I said, only showed a part of it. It's like, oh, do I show it all off? And then someone comes and gets the wrong idea.
Exactly.
So show off my security system first.
Yeah. And do you actually remember the first record you ever owned? Like on your own, I guess the first record that you purchased yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it might have been Judas Priest, Sin After Sin, because we were digging, like, we were renting them, and that was one of the earliest ones I can remember having on tape. I think I still have the tape, and I found Sad Wings after that and became my favorite. But yeah, it might have been Sin After Sin, might have been the first one.
And your first actual concert you went to? Like actually,
I snuck out and saw Anthrax and was it White Zombie, Quicksand? It was like early 90s. And my friend and I, like his mom was cool, but my parents weren't into it. So I just snuck out. I was going to sleep at his house. I remember we smoked cigars in the parking lot and, to party, I guess, which that was our way of like pre-gaming, smoking some cigars and then going in and saw Anthrax. And it was great. Like White Zombie blew him away though. It was like, I think it was like 93, whatever tour
what was
that was.
Persistence of Time was that?
No, Anthrax? It was like right when John Bush had joined. So it was like that. It was that tour. You know, I'm probably a little younger than you guys, but that was still, it was eye-opening, man. It was like this place called the Boathouse in Norfolk. And I saw Sepultura the next year there on KSAD. So those were a couple of the first ones I saw.
Nice. And Sabbath had a lot to do with you starting to play bass, right? The Master Reality record?
Yeah. You must have just listened to an interview I did like yesterday. It's great. Yeah. You do your homework. I appreciate that. No problem. I mean, that was one that stood out because, you know, Geezer was a big influence and bass just popping out and all that 70s rock. Like, I could figure it out, like some of that stuff too. It was like pentatonic scale stuff. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was just learning by ear and whatnot. But yeah, I like Geezer loud bass, man.
And you're a left-handed bass player. You actually, you play your bass like a rhythm guitar, basically.
Yeah, I mean, not because I'm left-handed. That's just because I was born that way. But yeah, I like distortion on the bass. And with bat, it basically is a rhythm guitar because we're a three-piece and you got to hold it down while Nick's shredding.
Okay. And then junior high school, you became friends with, I guess, two brothers. And can you explain to us what the Grits were?
Okay. So, yeah, you dug deep. Okay. So these two brothers, Eddie and Wes Blaylock, I'll name drop them because they were in a killer death metal band. This is like late 80s, early 90s. Like, so I'm in junior high. And they were originally called Malicious Encounter, which I still think I should make a song called that because it's such a tough name. They later changed their name to Necrosis when I think they got even heavier. But they could both the drummer was my age, Wes, and he could play drums. They're way ahead of his time. And Eddie was the guitar player's brother. They would do like, you know, covers and leaning towards the heavier speed metal shit. Like we'd listen to a lot of Beneath the Remains back then, I remember. And they even would get into like death territory, the band Death. And they're like, yeah, man, if you can play like Steve DiGiorgio, you can join our band. And I'm like 13. I'm like, okay, I'll figure this out. I mean, I knew what death was. I didn't realize how complicated the shit was. And I tried my damnedest and bought a bass. And they're also saying, oh, if you can play the Orion, you know, bass part from Metallica. Another tough one too. So I just tried my hardest, and of course I never joined their band, but I stuck with it, and that's what actually got me playing, you know, going from a fan to just playing music myself. So I owe it a lot to those guys for sure.
Is that the same time period you started heading over to Norfolk to shows, the punk shows and all that?
That was actually after that. So I mean, I you know, just being like a long-haired metalhead, you know, finding out about punk and hardcore and stuff firsthand through some of my friends were actually starting bands, and a lot of the that scene was like straight edge too, and I was just, you know, trying to buy like 40s on the corner and shit and still party and smoke weed. I'm going to these straight edge shows, and in Norfolk, like, I could actually buy beer at the store. They just didn't care. It's a little more inner city, so I'd go to these shows, be the only one drinking, not realizing that I could probably got this show shut down, being like a 14-year-old kid in there. And somehow, you know, these DIY shows, they the people still accepted me. You know, there was a lot of like just punks and hardcore kids, but I got to see an operation that was like DIY and people putting on their own shows. And it was really eye opening for me as well. Just being a metalhead going to these shows. So that was definitely a turning point just to see that it could be done. You know, there's not much of a barrier between the kids and the bands. That was definitely a turning point for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you were seeing like the basement shows and stuff, because what was I about 20 years old? What, 1999, 2000? You were living in a punk squad house, right? Basically.
Oh, so that, man. All right. So what I was just talking about would have been like 14 or 15. But when I moved up to Richmond in like 98 and, you know, 99, 2000, when I was 19 and 20, I did shows myself at my house, but I was like, you know, a shitty promoter. It wasn't like I was just putting them on in my backyard, basically had this bunker. And that's where I ended up starting Municipal Waste. But this house, like, I literally could write a book about this place, because it basically became like a squatter flop house. People that train hopped and whatnot would just come and stay with us. And I was like one of the only guys there. A couple other girls, Lauren and my friend Jen, were there. And it started out cool. We basically had shows and people could just come and party, and basically it became like overrun by people, like transient people. And I had to like physically fight some people out of the house. And one guy tried to burn down the house. One guy tried to kill me in my sleep one night, you know, fun stuff like that. And I was just like trying to put on shows, you know, we're just trying to, you know, you're 20, you want a party house, but it just became kind of overran. We got evicted, you know, but before that, like I started playing out back, because there'd be instruments set up. My friend's band, PCP Roadblock, was out there, and we just had some makeshift instruments, and I'd start bringing people out back and jamming, and that's like the early incarnation of the Waste.
Yeah, and you had
that house on Cary Street.
So you had, so because Andy Harris was what? So that was one of your friends from elementary school?
Yeah, Andy and I grew up in Virginia Beach, and he was actually in, me and him were in the first band I ever played in together, and I played bass and he played drums in that. So yeah, I mean, I originally had gotten my friend Brendan, who was like a crazy guitar player in town. He played drums. So it was everyone basically switching instruments that wasn't our main one. Me going from bass to guitar, Andy going from drums to bass, and Brendan going from guitar to drums. So I mean, it was a shit show. We knew what we wanted to do, but what turned out was just like some sloppy like metal punk stuff. That's the earliest Waste shit.
And you knew Tony from just basically around the area?
Yeah, Tony had a band called JRS, James River Scratch, and he had moved to the West Coast. And I started playing what became Municipal Waste, like while he was out there. And we were just kind of, you know, loosely in touch before that. We knew we liked each other. We were buddies, and I really liked what he did in that band. He was just a really charismatic front man. Just, you could tell he was having fun. Everyone was involved. You know, he had everyone's attention. You know, I saw him play a couple of basement shows, and he actually kept in touch with me and knew I was doing something that was a thrash project, knew it was called Municipal Waste. And when he moved back in town, I was like, dude, why don't you just play in the Waste? Let's just do this together. It was like a no brainer. And we just started jamming out there.
So the first name you guys were going to use, was that actually going to be, so I heard, think it was the Wrath of the Severed Head.
Yeah. I had some names thrown around. That still was my email on the first 7-inch Severed Wrath 13. But, yeah, ended up becoming a song. I threw around a bunch of names, but Municipal Waste, I had been sitting on for a while. It was actually me and Brendan, our original drummer, who were just riding down the road. A trash truck pulled up next to us. It just dawned on me. I mean, you see him everywhere, every town, yeah. All the trash in the city. I mean, suits the band.
And did you actually do the logo?
Yeah, I drew the logo. I drew like a drippy one first that you could see on some early stickers. And then I had a light table and I just kept drawing with like a ruler until I got the letters all to fit together. And I drew the one that, you know, everyone sees now. And I did it by hand, and it's like, never doing that again. That took me like fucking half a year, but yeah, it's cool. It's cool to see it all around where it's come from.
Yeah. So what was the actual first Municipal Waste song written?
Thrashing is my business and business is good. Definitely the music, and probably had that middle breakdown riff written, which I've gone to that little progression a million times through years, and then do a fast part in front of it. And it was like it clocked in at a minute, you know, and it was the early formula.
And you guys' first gig was actually at a, what, a, it was New Year's Eve? Was it 2001 New Year's Eve or 2000?
So 2000, turning into 2001, we played a house, our friend Plunkett's house. It was in Churchill and just a house show. Our friend's band, Lycosa, Malachite. I remember we made a flyer. I remember Tony spelled the name wrong. That was always fun, like Municipal Waste. So we had the P from Plunkett with an arrow pointing into it. And so we started out on a good note. But, yeah, it was just a fun house show, and people were jumping on top of each other right out the gate. So we thought maybe we had something going on.
And you guys were also back then, like, what, you guys were breaking into abandoned houses with generators?
We did that one time. Yeah, we did a lot of house shows back then. I mean, there was a house that did shows called The Compound down the street, and next door had just burned down. So we're like, we should play in that house. And we ran power from The Compound, and we even brought dry ice and coolers. And just as if it wasn't already spooky enough, like, we put some dry ice in the floor, and the ceiling was caving in, and people were just doing their thing, and, you know, could have died, could have collapsed on everybody. I got footage of that somewhere, man. We gotta dig that out.
I'm sure people would definitely want to see that. In 2001, you guys put out the first release for y'all, the 7-inch, which you guys did like 300 copies of that. You guys recorded on a DAT tape. Was that your first recording actually for you?
Like first time like recording like in a studio?
Yeah, or yeah, just yeah, recording in a studio.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can remember, I mean, I would just record on boomboxes before, but it probably sounded like we recorded on a boombox. So I don't know, the studio is pretty obsolete at that point. But yeah, you had to put the tape in at the same time. I remember that, these two tapes, and it was always fucking up.
You guys got Jeff. So I know artwork's really big with you, and I you know, it's, I mean, I definitely agree too with the album covers and just being, you know, with your posters, and you look at even like Bat's artwork and Municipal Waste artwork. It's, you know, you could definitely tell you guys put a lot into that. Even the first 7-inch, you guys got Jeff Gaither to work on that for you? Got the artwork?
Yeah, we were big Accused fans. That was definitely one thing me and Tony lined up on early on. We loved the Accused. We loved the artwork from them. So that was a big get, you know, early on. And I got it tattooed on my inner arm there, the back cover.
Did the 7-inch pick, like, right away, were you guys starting to get feedback from it? Could you tell, like, you know, when your band, did the band start catching, I don't know what you, I guess, underground, no, following, I mean, we were,
it would be in like MRR and small like punk publications like that. And I mean, we were just having fun, man. I don't think we were just rolling with it. I don't think it was like, okay, we got this. But Tony's very driven, and, you know, knew how to push, you know, push us to record and make records back then, when we were just like, we would just show up to the show late and cancel shows. And we were not like the band, you know, it was not like a rolling machine. We were just having fun, man. It was just kids at that point, you know.
You get what you guys would do, you know. Obviously, would you say that, like, influence wise back then, would you say like DRI, Suicidal, 7 Seconds, and stuff like that would be some bands?
I always champion like Razor. I always mention as an early influence, and even like Sacrilege, Hallows Eve. I mean, there's obvious comparison you can go on with thrash bands, but it's more about like bands that had like a punk element too. You know, that's like, we've always managed to keep that alive in there.
Yeah. Cause would you say personally, you're pretty much just as much of a punk fan as you are a metal fan, or?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, Bat lends itself to that too. I mean, everyone's into hard rock and punk, and it just, you know, you could only subgenre so much stuff. It's just, if it sounds good. I like punk drumming, you know. I like straightforward stuff.
Yeah, you guys would. So what, you guys would put out 2 splits in 2002, and then you guys would also record the band's first full length, which would be the Waste Them All full length. And you guys recorded that reel to reel with No Click.
Yeah, I mean, I've done everything with No Click from then to now. So that was we got to talk about Brandon joining the band. So the first couple of records had Brendan on drums.
Yeah,
we got Brandon.
Brendan Farrell, correct?
Yeah, Brandon Farrell. Yeah, a lot of people were confused because the first drummer was named Brendan, the second one was Brandon. That gets looped in. Yeah, but when Brandon joined, that really kind of kicked us in the ass, because he's just such a killer drummer. And he was 17 at the time, you know, so me and Tony kind of scouted him out. We saw him playing in North Carolina, and he just had all this energy, and we were just like, man, we should get this guy in the band. And he joined, and the band totally changed right then. And me and him just hung out every day and just would go to the practice space and write stuff. And it was just so easy to write with him, and he had cool ideas, and we basically figured out the formula then, you know, just to be all go, no slow. And he passed away. So it's kind of bittersweet talking about him, but,
And you and Brandon, you guys wrote a lot of that material, right? For Waste Them All Together.
Well, yeah. I mean, all of it, you know, musically, just, you know, he was living in the practice space because he couldn't get along with my girlfriend at the time, and he would just live out there. I mean, there's so much history to go into with this. I don't know how much time you want to spend on it, but
it's a lot, man.
Yeah, we're just reeling through it. I mean, I'm here, you know, I don't know how much time we got.
As much time as you want, man. And you got, so, you know, back then, like you said, you were like no guitar overdubs, right? You have a pretty much way that you like to do things, right? It's no guitar overdubs. You're not a fan of triggers and all that stuff. And
well, no, there's one guitar overdub, always a rhythm guitar. But even at that point, I didn't even know I could fix anything. We're just like, oh, it's going reel to reel. All right, what you see is what you get. And we made sure the drum takes were good, but there's like mistakes on that record. I think it's cool though, you know, wrong notes on the bass. There's some funny spots on there, but yeah, it had its charm, you know, and we just kind of blazed through it.
You guys worked with Mark Miley on that?
Yeah. Mark, I actually saw him the other day. He practices over where Bat does now. So he's still kicking it. And yeah, just a cool dude that, drank tons of High Life and recorded reel to reel. He could splice it all together.
You know, and you guys were very, obviously the DIY thing was really big, and you and Tony were very pretty much hands-on with everything on early Municipal Waste.
Still are. I mean, this is how it's been done from the big get-go. You know, we just divide and conquer.
And artwork wise for that, for the Waste Them All, you had Brian White did that?
Yeah. Brian White did the Waste Them All cover and helped us do some layout stuff on Hazardous too.
And he was also, so you also played in a band called Immortal Avenger for 2 years. You guys did like what, two demos off of that?
Brian White did the Immortal Avenger cover too. Valor and Justice. I remember sitting in his room around the same time. Yeah. So that was like a heavy metal thing I did with a few guys in town that ended up being some of the same guys that were in Vulture with me too. And yeah, I mean, we played a handful of shows. I've always tried to do a proper heavy metal band. That's been something difficult to keep together over the years, but it's always in my blood, something I want to do.
And with that, so 2004, was that the first time you guys hit Europe too with Waste?
Yep. Waste was over there, still like a DIY tour, still just acted up, you know, went over there and just played for beer basically. But had a great time. Well, Brandon left the band right before that, so our friend Barry Cover filled in on drums. Barry was in Immortal Avenger with me, and we happened to be set up in my house practicing, and I just had to teach him like 13 songs real fast. It was last minute. He basically saved our ass. Barry actually saved our ass a few times as a driver too on a few tours, so we owe a lot to Barry.
And you keep a lot of the band. Like one thing I noticed is that you have seems like there's a lot of friendship in those bands, you know, and it's pretty like, I look at the timeline of Municipal Waste. And if you look at like how you guys have kept, you know, usually when a band, you know, you guys partied a lot back in the day and you guys still kept it together. It's pretty fucking impressive, I got to say.
Well, I appreciate you noticing that. I mean, yeah, we're still tight with a lot of people that were there from the beginning. And I think Richmond's a lot like that too. It's a small town, but not a lot of people, but a lot of output. Like we all, you know, share members and bands, and you know, if it's a good, you know, if a good friendship lasts a long time, it means a band's gonna last a long time. You know, I think it's just as important personality wise to get along as musically, you know, and I think that's why the Waste has stood the test of time, and Bad as well. I mean, we're all best friends doing this, which you know, you get each other's throats here and there, but it's like, pick your battles and grow from it, really.
Yeah. Well, we're actually going to play the title track from the debut full length. This is Municipal Waste with the song Waste Them All from the 2003 record. We'll be right back on the morgue with Ryan Waste after this song.
You're wasting your time.
No,
that's where you're wrong. You're wasting our time.
Now we're going to waste you.
My life, where I stood, where I stood, so I must never stood, never stood.
ago. That was Waste Them All from Municipal Waste off the 2003 record. So after that, what, Andy Harris leaves the band in 2004 also?
Yeah, Andy had to get his life together, you know, without going too far into detail. But he, man, that's still my best friend. Like, we talk every day. He's a art teacher now. He's doing a lot better. Like, he basically had to get sober, just long story short. And he's been like 15 years sober. So he's, you know, I miss the guy being in the band every day, but we definitely stay in touch. And, you know, still to this day, he's like my oldest best friend.
You guys also get Dave Witte. So we know, so Dave Witte was, he was actually, we're Jersey guys, me and Ed. He was in a band called Human Remains in Jersey and obviously Burnt by the Sun. So he was filling in at first, right, before he got the gig?
Well, I think, well, Tony had gotten him a job at the t-shirt printing shop that Tony was working at. And I think he was kind of trying to convince him to join the band. I mean, we needed a drummer after we came back from Europe. And, you know, Dave was a little hesitant. He said he'd just do the record. He's like, okay, I'll do a record. We got him to come out and do a couple shows with us. This is still Andy was in the band. And I think it's once he came out and hit the road with us and he just knew this was something he was into. It was just fun. I think it was leaving kind of like a tough guy scene with fights and stuff in Jersey that I think because he had just left Burnt by the Sun or maybe he was still playing with them. But not to say those guys are like that, because those guys are great, but it was just the mentality going from like that to like people just having fun and circle pitting. And I think we all got along. Dave's great. And yeah, he joined the band right after that, after a weekend. We coerced him in.
And when Dave joined the band, do you feel like that's when did you guys feel like you guys really started taking shit really serious? Because you guys, I know you guys recorded the Hazardous Mutation record next.
Well, we got to talk about Phil. I mean, Phil came right after that. So
Phil Hall, which is like,
Phil, you know, so Andy and Dave just did that one weekend together. And then Andy took, you know, his leave and we got Phil. So Phil and Dave basically joined at the same time, minus what, two shows. And yeah, I mean, both those guys are like very accomplished musicians. I think that really helped. You know, Phil learned all the songs like in one practice. He came, I gave him a cassette, and he came back and knew every song. I mean, he just blew us away. And me and Tony had seen him perform in like death metal bands and stuff, so we knew he knew his shit. But yeah, I think that was a big thing from him. Phil was kind of a quiet guy, and we were just partying like maniacs, and he got thrown into that. It's cool to see the evolution of Phil, though, man. He's such a killer dude. And but yeah, I mean, that, so Phil and Dave in 2004 about the same time joined.
And Phil also, he handles a lot of the recording, right, when you guys do recording for Waste?
We've done some stuff. I think Last Rager we recorded some stuff. He's just one of those guys that can do it all, so we'll demo some stuff. But I think we've recorded actually with him a couple times. But it's just, he's just one of those guys. He's a wizard, man. He can record. He can play every instrument. You know, me and him did a ZZ Top cover band with Dave, and he learned all the Billy Gibbons guitar parts over the pandemic. So
that's awesome.
It's crazy, the talent there.
When you guys did Hazardous Mutations, how'd you guys get hooked up with Eric?
Well, Eric had already been kind of courting us, and you know, it was just me and Tony left, really. And we did the European tour. We went ahead and signed when it was just two people in the band, even before Dave and Phil joined, just to kind of hold it together. I think it was like, hey, you know, we're going to do this. Let's just figure it out, you know? So, I mean, luckily we got Phil and Dave to make a record with us right then. But yeah, the Eric thing was a big deal. I think it made people question the band coming from like a DIY thing. So I felt like we had a lot to prove. And still one of my favorite records is Hazardous Mutation. Like, we, you know, our shit was on the line and we delivered.
And you guys worked with Corey Smoot on that one.
Yeah, Corey, you know, it's just another Richmond connection. Like, Guar is like a big part of Richmond. Like, we practice at the Slave Pit still. Like, Corey was living in like Southside Richmond, had a studio in his basement, you know, and we just went and laid it down just like we knew. And Corey was really fun to work with and had some cool ideas. And Corey's another one that we've lost. It's really sad, man. A lot of these people we're talking about aren't with us anymore.
You know, and with Corey, you guys, did you actually, so I know you guys did what, with the Red Chord in 2006, you guys went out. Was that the first time you actually toured with Guar?
Yeah, so 2006 was our first Guar tour. You know, we had just done Australia for the first time. We came back, and that tour was huge for us because it was like the first time we were playing legit big rooms and learning how to kind of work those rooms, coming from smaller gigs and house shows, and we learned a lot from Guar for sure.
And, you know, so I do want to get to the shows actually. Now, I want to ask you though, with Ed Repka, right? When you're dealing with someone like him, you know, we're a big album cover art fans, especially I know you are too. When you go to record stores, how you pick out half of your records. When you first worked with Ed, how was that? Were you like, was that something where do you guys give him an idea? How much hands-on do you have with Ed?
Yeah, I got to talk with him via email, and it was real straightforward, but it was his creative brain was really cool to pick because I kind of explained the hazardous mutation concept, and he really got deep into like, okay, so are these mutants, are they on the side of the truck driver, or are they taking over the truck? Are they taking over the city, or are they, you know, and he had these cool creative questions that I think really lent itself to the cover. And the guy's a legend. I mean, it wasn't more than a few emails. And the second thing he came up with was what we went with. I think he did kind of like a Rat Fink, like oversized head thing that we were like, okay, that's a little cartoony even for, we weren't expecting that from Ed, even though it was cool. We dialed it down to what it became. But yeah, just an honor. And he hadn't been doing a lot of pieces at that time. You know him from obviously all the early stuff, Megadeth and Death and all the killer covers did in the 80s, you know, but it was really cool to get him kind of cooking again.
Also, you guys, you know, one thing I know you, with you, you're a big horror guy, and obviously we'll talk about that because we're all, sure. You know, I'm in the same. Also on that record, I think you guys sampled something from, I know you're a Phantasm guy, right? You guys did sample Phantasm on that record.
Yeah, Phantasm, our boy Reggie talking. Yeah, I mean, it was just this sample that it didn't make any sense to the song that it went to, but it's just one of our favorite lines. And that's before they were flagging us for samples. You know, we were still underground enough to get that one in. I don't think we could sample that movie now. Or I've tried to sample River's Edge and stuff since, and they're like,
oh,
no.
God, River's Edge with Crispin Glover.
That's one of my favorite movies all time.
Thought about that in fucking years.
Killer soundtrack too, man.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, that was one of the original metal movies. If you go back to like.
Yeah, I mean, if we get into talking about my film, that's a huge
event. Oh, we definitely will, yeah. Exit Stage Death, yep, definitely.
Yep.
And you guys, so, and one thing was, what you guys, which I think was, it's kind of, you guys really clicked on to the, like, Thrasher, right? The K-Killer video. I think that was also 2006, that time period. You guys were on that soundtrack too?
I believe so, yeah. I think I got a copy of that.
And I mean, and so I think you guys don't skate though, right? Which is because you guys have such a, I know even from when I first heard about Municipal Waste, like all the skaters, everyone fucking loved Municipal Waste. But do you guys?
I mean, I tried to skate when I was a kid and I ate shit. So I stopped that real fast. I mean, I feel like everyone's tooled around, but I mean, you grow up hanging out with skaters and we just lend the soundtrack to them. You know, it's, you know, I'd rather jam and let some people hurt themselves.
Yeah, and you guys, like, we'll talk about some of the shows you guys, because you guys have done, I mean, I don't know how, like, you're a pretty humble dude. Like, I even got to say, even, like, so dealing with you for this show, I've dealt with a lot of, like I said, we deal with a lot of artists. We contact them directly, which you can do now, because it's a whole different world. It's a whole different world we live in. But, man, I got to say, dude, Ryan, you are one of the most down-to-earth. Like, Ryan got back to me right away, set the shit up, like, made sure I got a copy of the record, which we both heard the record. For the new Bat Records, which we'll talk about at the end of the show. But I got to say, man, you were totally like, it was almost like, could this guy be this down to fucking earth? Like, so I have to give you props. So I look at the shows you guys played. I'm going to mention a few here just because for me, as a guy who played in a band and never succeeded, really, it's pretty overwhelming. Like, so 2007, you guys played a Leeds Festival. You guys are playing with bands like, and just to mention some of the band sizes that were on, like, you got Smashing Pumpkins, Nine Inch Nails, the Street Dogs, which is fucking great group.
You know who I was excited about that played that? It was Body Count.
Body Count?
I met Ice-T, yeah. And I met his brother, and I thought it was him, and we were calling him Nesty, and everyone made fun of me because I thought it was Ice-T. But I did get to meet Ice-T eventually. But yeah, I mean, the mainstream bands, we didn't care about that at that show. It was like, I think we played with like Sick of It All, too.
But it just shows how like those...
We were the same guys, yeah. No, I mean, I get what you're saying. Yes. I appreciate that, but... If anything, we were like, fuck all these other bands.
Yeah, because you guys are playing Vakken. You guys toured. Was it Agnostic? That was your first Agnostic Front, Suicidal, The Haunted was also, what, 2007, 2006?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we bounced around and got to, because one cool thing about The Waste is we always mixed it up and got to play with, like, hardcore bands and metal bands. We never stuck to the same thing, you know, which we still are that way.
And this is what brings me, I mentioned this earlier in the show, like, so 2007, you guys are playing these shows. You guys are, like, you guys are younger, you're partying, man. It's like everything that you could want is kind of at your hands at this time period. You know, you guys are drinking, well, all the stuff, but you guys are keeping it under control. How many, just from the outside looking out, I mean, you have to be impressed by that, because I'm sure you've seen a lot of bands. Like, me and Ed were talking to somebody that we had on a couple weeks ago about this. You kind of find out who your bandmates are once the booze starts flowing on the road, or who can tour and who can't tour, right? I mean, you must have seen some shit out there.
Yeah, I mean, and I drank every day, like, in the whole 20 years, you know, and this year I quit drinking this year.
I heard that,
which is crazy, you know. That could be a whole nother podcast. I mean, it's still a new thing, you know, but
completely? Are you like done right now?
I haven't had a drink in like 130 days. So that's been my year this year. But like I said, this seems like a long interview. I don't want to go on into that, but I feel pretty good from it. But definitely have way too many drunken stories, that, at least that I can remember.
Yeah. So, and during this time period, are you guys, because, you know, one thing with Miscible Waste, you guys are always on the road. So are you already writing for the next record now, The Art of Partying, while you're on the road?
Yeah, so are you around 2006?
Yeah, about 2007, I'd say, right?
Yeah, because I think that record came out in 2007. So we were squeezing it in. We went up to what was cool about that record is we went up to Massachusetts and recorded with Zeus, and we actually camped out and stayed there. And some of the stuff we came up with in the studio there. But, yeah, so that we were touring nonstop, but, I mean, we were writing when we could, and that was just – man, it was one of those time periods where it was just a mile a minute.
You guys do you guys record The Art of Party. You guys recorded that in Massachusetts?
Yeah, it was in Hadley, Mass, which is like kind of a small town up there. You guys must have crossed paths with Zeus at some point. I don't know. This is just he kind of courted us. He was an old thrasher too, and he approached us. We ended up doing two records with him.
You guys, that's Christopher Harris. 3 Inches of Blood,
Zeus. Yeah, call him Zeus,
D. Schneider. And you guys, and the cover art. So you guys have used this cover, the artist before, but I don't want to butcher his name, but I probably
Andre Buzikoff is
Andre Buzikoff. Oh, I was going to say, right? Name. Okay. I know he worked with Bat, The Cruel Discipline. I got the shirts and all that stuff, and he did that artwork. And Autopsy, he's worked with, which actually the Autopsy, the Awakened by Gore, is an awesome piece. But how did you get involved with Andre?
So Andre was a roommate and bandmate of our good friend Scotty from Tank Crime. So Andre was in a band called Deadfall with Scotty, and Scotty joined up with Waste in like 2002. We toured with his band Boatsec. And so we've known Scotty basically from, you know, the second or third year we were a band. And so he just kind of was a package deal, lived with Scotty and did a lot of artwork for them. And I think Tony first contacted him for The Art of Party and around that era. And yeah, I mean, the guy could do anything artistically. So he was just like more of a Russian punk rocker. And we were like, well, we want to do this scenario, like people getting killed while drinking, basically. And it was, became one of those record covers. And then he ended up doing 1 million thrash records after that. So he kind of changed gears.
Yeah. Do you feel like The Art of Partying is when you guys really started like taking off? Like it was just, I mean,
I think that's what people started hearing the band name. Like we would, you know, we did one record on Earache and they really pushed the angle in the UK. And I think they even pushed the party angle a little too hard to where it got kind of goofy that I got a little annoyed with at one point. But I think that's, as people say, the breakthrough record industry term. I don't know. It's like when people figured out that we were a band.
We're going to play Headbanger Face Rip off of that record. Anything you could tell us about that? Or is there any, you know, I mean, you don't have to if you don't want to, but is there anything you can share with that?
Yeah, I remember sitting in Tony's bedroom and me and him were bouncing back the lyrics back and forth, just making each other laugh, talking about a girl putting on her makeup and throwing herself down the stairs and just rapid fire vocals. I think the title I came up with was from a video shoot idea we wanted to do, and we were just jotting notes down. And we're like, okay, Headbanger Face Rip. Like one guy's going to rip his face off. And it was just like a shorthand for something. And it just became a song title.
There you go. We're going to play that song now. This is Headbanger Face Rip on the Tampa Morgue from Municipal Waste off the Art of Partying record on Earache Records. We'll be back after this tune on the Tampa Morgue.
He's going to the concert. He's full of that rage. Sweater in my face up. Throw it on the stage.
So that was Headbanger Face Rip from Municipal Waste off the Art of Partying record. And you know, before we get to the next record, I do want to mention, so you, like, obviously, like we said, you guys were relentlessly on the road, man. And there's a couple of things I did want to ask you that, like, what is some of the worst shit that local bands could do that you play with? Because I know you guys are very supportive of local bands. You guys get them on shows. I know, you know, with Bat and stuff too. But what are some of the, for people who are listening, man, is there anything that just drives you crazy that local bands do when they open up for you guys?
I think anyone will say this, and it's when you break down your gear on stage, like drummers putting their cymbals away on stage and rolling up cables. But I mean, that's, I mean, anyone should know that. That's an easy one. Sometimes they'll drink all your beer and your rider too. I mean, we did that to bands too, though. So we're guilty.
Karma. The karma comes around. Yeah. You guys ever had to deal with food poisoning out there?
Yeah, actually did the album Massive Aggressive with food poisoning. I ate at a fucking Buffalo Wild Wings, which I'll never do again. And I was shitting and puking during my guitar tracks the whole time. So that's why that record's mean and pissed off.
Well, that leads perfectly into the next record, you know, Massive Aggressive. Because so when you guys were doing that, were you guys kind of trying to separate a little bit? Like you mentioned earlier that you were getting kind of fed up with being lumped into the whole like party thing constantly, right?
Well, I mean, we shot ourselves in the foot having an album called The Art of Partying. I mean, Waste Them All could have been The Art of Partying at the rate we were going, you know, if you were trying to, you know, talk about our personal lives. But yeah, I mean, we... You know, it's called the Serious Record, but I mean, it was really just another press tool like to talk about, like all the, you know, obviously there's still tongue in cheek stuff at that point, but I mean, you get sick of one thing, you want to do something different. So, I mean, there was a small turning point there for sure. I mean, you can see.
And you guys did that. And then another band I want to talk about, because I know you basically around the same time period, 2013, you were doing a band called Vulture. Yeah. You guys did the 2013 was the full length, right? You guys did On the Edge.
Well, okay, so you're definitely behind on that. So we broke up in 2013. We started in 2009 and did an album called Shocking Its Prey that came out.
But you guys do a couple demos, right?
We did a 7-inch called – we actually did a 7-inch that ended up coming out on Earache called Nightwalker. That was a split with Enforcer. But we did – I mean, Earache was hot to get the band – and we had just left Earache, so I wasn't about to just sign with Earache for my, you know, new project. And that's me and Nick, and then the singer Mortal Avenger, Hubbard, Metal Hubbard, and Barry was on drums early on. And then, yeah, that was just another, you know, my other attempt at doing heavy metal, which I'm always still trying to do, and it'll lead into the film, which, you know, is basically a heavy metal horror movie. But so, yeah, so if you go back, around, I guess it's around Massive Aggressive, we started Vulture. And that's, you know, when me and Nick started playing together, which led to Bat and led to other things. But yeah.
What was it? There was a, you guys did an EP in 2011, Vulture, right?
Yeah, Shocking Its Prey. And that's the one I want to re-release because that went out of print. It was on this label, Heavy Artillery, and that it went defunct, the label. And then somehow Earache, they just sold their catalog to Earache. So I'd just gotten off Earache, and then my new band's record ends up on Earache. So we're like, okay, that's interesting how that worked. In fairness, Dan Tobin was a really good friend who was the A&R guy for Earache and a huge heavy metal fan. He was the one that really wanted Vulture. So I was like, hey, man, well, you got Vulture. There you go. Didn't last very long. But so, yeah, Vulture is the band that will do the soundtrack for my heavy metal horror movie, that if you want to get into that later.
So, yeah, because 2013, you start writing your script, right? This is when you begin the idea for Exit Stage Death?
Yeah, I had the idea that I started doing Living Fast, my talk show right then, which I basically wanted to do a late night talk show where I brought in, you know, some heavy metal heroes and talk about my records and just kind of do a variety show. And it's a very ambitious project. And I did the first one pretty produced, you know, I had a film crew up here. You can tell the difference between that and the ones that followed. And it was fun. And the most fun I had was doing that skit with John Gallagher.
I was going to ask you, how'd you get John at your house? Was that actually your apartment at that time?
Yeah. So that's the room I'm in right here, right now. So it's like my media room. And John was living in Virginia, and we've become friends. You know, he lived up in Maryland and not too far from Richmond. And, you know, we were friendly enough that I was like, hey, why don't you be the first guest on this talk show, you know, starting up called Living Fast. And he was just all about it. And the most fun I had was creating the sketch where I'm like pulling a Raven record out. I look at the sleeve, and next thing I know, smoke blows out of my bathroom, and he pops through with his bass and just starts fucking wailing on it. Winds blowing through my hair, and it's just the setup that we did. And I was like, I just want to make a movie that's like all that, that's all awesome scenes too, yeah, like that, you know. So I didn't really want to be a journalist and interview people after a while, and I also didn't want to sit there and just talk about my records. I just wanted to enjoy and listen to them, so I didn't do the show much longer. But now I'm like getting itching to do the show again, you know. And I think but I put my efforts that I would do into the show, into the script that I started writing back then. That is correct.
How many episodes did you do? Like six?
I five or six. I mean, the second episode was more just the Vulture tour in Europe.
Battle Axe and Satan. And
yeah, so I had access to a lot of these old New Wave British heavy metal bands, which is like my favorite shit. And I actually got to, yeah, and Truffle and like some unknown bands. And I got to interview Jeff and Tony from Venom and stuff too. So you know, it was cool just talking to a lot of these people that can't believe that, you know, we know about their band. Like, yeah, like Dave King from Battle Axe, and some of the coolest guests were just when I was in England for that festival. But yeah, it was just more of a tour video I turned into the second episode. Then I went to Canada and did an interview with Razor, who I, you know, was friends with as well. And then I did like a U.S. metal episode, and then I stopped and I want to do more, but maybe I'll just do them short, you know, shorthand, and just talk about a VHS or a record and just do some shit. But I really want to just make this film. I mean, that's where I want to put my effort.
And the film you're talking about, you know, I know I think all three of us are in the same. I grew up a big fan of the 80s. You would say it would be the heavy metal horror movies, you know?
Oh, like, big time.
And I know you were really into those too. And so your film is going to, again, it's going to be called Exit Stage Death. You finished. So during the pandemic, you and Cabrera and another one of your friends finished up the script.
Yeah,
right?
Let me give credit to the other two guys. Yeah, because it's not just me. Like, so I had the outline basically, and maybe, you know, half of a script written. I got with my friend Jamie Thompson, who is it was like an editor for The Guardian. He's a Scottish guy, old punk rocker, and he had just inquired about it. You know, because I talked in passing that I was writing one. He's like, well, if you ever need me to edit or something, you know, keep me in mind. So I did hit him up for that. And that turned into me and him going back and forth and starting writing dialogue and writing it together. Like he would normally just type while I talked, and then next thing you know, we're writing it together. So, which is, I find it much easier when you have someone to bounce ideas off of and someone typing, which is like, you second guess yourself when you go down to type. And so, yeah, pandemic hits. Fast forward to me meeting Norman Cabrera, who I'm working with constantly now. We've done three videos for actually four videos total. He did two for Waste and two for Bat now. The Right for Exorcism, Slime and Punishment, Electrified Brain, and then we're going to do Revenge of the Wolf video, which is already filmed. It comes out next week. So that's actually comes out the day the Bat record comes out. But yeah, Norman and I have become best friends, more or less, man. Like, he's out in LA, but I'm going back and forth. We're working on, you know, from the guy's the most energetic, just motivated person I've ever met. Like, he's in Spain right now with his surf rock band, the Ghastly Ones, playing, and, you know, meanwhile making effects for the movies and making music videos for us, and we're writing the script together. So the guy's insane. So I got to give a ton of credit to Norman Cabrera. But what happened was, I presented this idea that I had between me and Jamie that became Exit Stage Death to Norman. He's like, it's good, but, you know, you're about halfway there. He's like, why don't we, you know, punch this up? And so pandemic hits, actually had time to do it. We sat through Zoom meetings, just like you and I are talking. And it was the most fun I ever had in my life, coming up with this dialogue and just laughing and just throwing over the top ideas out. And he said, there's no bad ideas. You know, you just spitball and, you know, it turns into something good. So plenty of bad ideas got thrown around, and we've changed it four times and punched it up, built the characters up. And I think I got a finished script now. It's about 111 pages. So I feel pretty confident with it now.
Nice. You guys are going to do it independent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would never want to hand this over to a studio to ruin it. So it's going to have to be independent. So we're going to look for funding and try to do it ourselves. And, you know, he's been in the movie business 35 years. So, I mean, there's experience there with him, and we know there'll be good effects because he's the practical effect wizard. I mean, he came up under Rick Baker in the 80s, Norman. And
Baker, I mean, Baker did the freaking, it's funny, he goes way back to even the Werecat from the Thriller video from Michael Jackson, if you go to Baker. I mean,
And American Werewolf in London. And
Howling. And
he actually, yeah, they commissioned him for Howling, but then it got taken back. It's like, someone got a little jealous of that. Norman has Rick Baker's mold from the Howling that never got used. So,
oh, really?
It's pretty wild, man.
And Cabrera, he like Planet of the Apes, Drag Me to Hell. I mean, the guy's kind of crazy.
He started working with
Wishmaster.
Rick. Yeah, all that stuff. And it's crazy. I'll bring up a movie and Norm's like, yeah, I worked on that. And talk about humble. I mean, the dude's just a genius and so humble. But just, you know, so positive and so great to work with. So we're going to get this thing done, man. That's another reason I went sober, is just to make this movie happen, man. I think that's the only way it's going to work.
Well, you know, when you start getting ready to do your funding and stuff like that, you can always, we'll do it, you know, always throw us whatever, man. We'll throw it up. No problem.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
We're
talking about it now. Yeah.
So yeah. We know how it goes, man. So, you know, and so we mentioned Vulture. And so Vulture is pretty much the soundtrack to the, so are you and Nick going to actually write new Vulture material for the soundtrack?
So what's funny is the new Vulture material was stuff we were writing even back in 2013. Like, we had songs that we're like, this will be the movie rock song. So, you know, Nick had a ton of riffs and I had concepts lyrically. I was working with our original singer. I went back and forth and we had all this stuff. And, you know, Vulture, our drummer passed away, Carlos, another death, you know, and so one of my really good friends, and it kind of put a damper on things. We lost our singer, didn't die, but he, you know, he's came and gone twice in the band.
I was going to say, you guys went through two singers or just one?
Yeah, we went through two singers, and I was going to get the original guy back for the film and still might do it. I think I might even hit up John Gallagher and just bring in a bunch of, you know, heavy hitters to sing, because there's three bands in the film, so I'm going to have three different vocalists anyway. But yeah, Nick and I were writing the music back then. We'll probably touch up a bunch of the songs, and actually – it was my long shot attempt at making Vulture happen, was doing a film around it. So if this doesn't work, hey, man, I tried.
Well, we're going to play Vulture right now, actually. We're going to play On the Edge off the 2013 full length.
Can you play something different?
Yeah, tell me what you want us to play, man. We'll throw it on.
Play Rule Breaker off Vulture.
Rule Breaker. Any kind of story behind it, or just...
Yeah, we did a music video for that one. That was like the era that had our first singer, Hubbard, in it. And I got to drive a car around terrorizing Richmond and Impala, drinking whiskey back when I was doing that.
There you go. We're going to play that right now. We're going to play Rule Breaker from Vulture, and we'll be back on the Tampa Morgue with Ryan Waste right after this song. That, have you guys already started writing the songs for the Vulture songs for the?
Like I said, we had in 2013, we had about five songs written that were going to be for the soundtrack. Like,
so
we
will you add an additional one, or is it going to be pretty much?
No, we're gonna rewrite them all. Like use the good of that and rewrite stuff for that. So, you know, we had to crank out a Bat record first.
Yeah, we're actually going to talk about Bat here in a minute. And before we get to Bat, so you guys finished a Massive Aggressive record. And you guys finally, is this when you guys took a year off finally after tour and all that? Because you guys were like a fucking machine. It's crazy when I look at the tour you guys did.
I can't even remember. I don't think we ever took a year off. I don't think that ever happened. was that 2010? I don't know. No, definitely weren't taking a year off. I mean, we might have slowed down on touring, but yeah, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought when you guys did the Fatal Feast, you guys had taken some time off to write that record.
Well, a lot of people, like, we all started our different projects around that time. I think, well, we changed labels. I think it was just a time where everyone was like, okay, let's do some other stuff. I mean, that's pretty much when Bat started and Iron Reagan started. And, you know, Dave was doing a million other projects as usual, too. So I wouldn't say time off, but yeah, there was, you know, probably gaps in there.
And you guys, like, the Fatal Feast, you guys recorded that in South River, New Jersey?
Yeah, Tracks East. So that's where Dave recorded back in the day, because you guys are Jersey guys. Yeah. He had the big Skid Row record on the wall. That's
Eric Rachel, right? Was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, or? Eric Rachel, yeah.
Yeah.
Super cool guy. You know, Dave recommended him, you know, being a Jersey guy. We had a good time up there. Basically did the drums up there, and then, I think, no, we did all the music up there.
I think Eric did MOD too, and Life Once Lost, and so they did a bunch of stuff. You guys did that record, and then so after that, was that, that's pretty much when the 5-year break happened after Fatal Feast, right? I know not really a break, but you guys pretty much started doing, like, you guys were always on a cycle. It always felt like.
I don't feel like we're on a cycle. I think it was just we changed labels. Everyone was doing side projects, and we were still touring nonstop. So. I mean, everyone likes you when you sit and look at a timeline, it's like, yeah, there's 5 years, but we just, you know, you can't go from tour to writing and tour to writing. I mean, there was definitely, the gap was for a reason. It was, we weren't just sitting on our ass ever.
Well, you guys were always busy, and you guys, so the idea for Bat, so we're going to go to, like,
yeah, this is,
that was,
this is the,
that
yeah.
was something, that was something you had prior to the formation of the band, right? Because at first, was Bat supposed to be, you were pretty much going to do everything yourself, like kind of like a studio project, I guess.
So Bat, you know, without a name at that point, was going to be something me and Felix Griffin did. And people know Felix from DRI. He's a Texas guy. And we had just run into each other over the years and talked about doing a project, Discharge, Celtic Frost, like straightforward type shit. And, but there was no name Bat attached to that. That was just me and Felix talking about doing a band. And then it took until, let's say, yeah, 2012, you know, yeah, probably 2012, where Nick and I were like, well, let's, you know, I got Felix wants to do a group. You want to just do it together? I mean, Nick and I were hanging out every day. We were, you know, Vulture was kind of winding down. So it took me and him getting together just to cook up some songs to make it even a thing. You know, me and Felix never even played together before that, but just knowing that Felix was down, we could cook up these riffs and he would just come lay it in. So that was really cut and dry with that. Like we actually recorded some stuff and sent it to him, and I know he didn't practice to it or anything. He just came and did it. That's Felix's style. Felix is punk as fuck. He just came there and just right there, you know, laid it down. We recorded the demo pretty much right the first time it came.
Do you think that's what gave, like, especially the early Bat, is that what made it so straightforward pretty much was, you know?
And, yeah, it was recording. Supposed to be. Yeah, it was supposed to be that way. But, I mean, I'm talking, like, no transitions, just, like, cruising through. Yes. It's because he's learning the songs as he goes. And, I mean, there was no, you know, the songs hadn't marinated. That's actually why we re-recorded everything from the demo on Wings of Chains, because it is a demo. Like, we never intended that to be a record. Hell's Headbangers convinced us to put it on vinyl, whereas it was originally just a tape on Tank Crimes with Scotty, who I talked about before, and which was cool. You know, the fact that they wanted to put it on a record is cool, but the songs had just been written, and that was recorded on Reel to Reel too. So that was a lot of just live takes, no overdubs, really, just solos and one take vocals, really. And what's cool, it's a demo. Sounds like a demo. It's supposed to.
It's amazing to me that no one took this name. I mean, how everyone I look at, I'm like, how the fuck does someone, like, you know, think of, like, it's like the hardest. So, and is it true? Is this bullshit or is this true that you actually kept, you had the name Bat, but with like 7 upside down crosses after? Do you really?
Yeah, so you heard me say that in an interview. Yes,
yeah, is this true actually, or were you fucking early?
I still had the little picture. So I had drawn out a little shitty bat drawing with seven upside down crosses as T's. So we were bat with seven T's originally. And that just, I mean, that's a lot of T's, man. We had to shave some T's off down all the way down to just the one. So, yeah, I couldn't believe the name had been taken, and it really hadn't. And then there's some other janky bats out there now. I'm not going to go into it, but we were first, and we're the only true bat. And yeah, let's get into it, because this is the record that's coming out. So what do you want to know?
Well, you know, first of all, with bat, is Sean McGrath did the logo for you guys from Impaled and Ghoul? And...
Yeah, on another napkin. So Sean actually painted the vulture shocking its prey, actually did the inking, and Andre painted it. So that was a combo. Andre,
Didn't he do your Living Fast logo too?
Sean McGrath did the Living Fast, and me and Sean just toured together with Ghoul. So Sean's a great artist, great logo artist. Yeah, he did the first bat logo, which has evolved, into another guy, did the second one from Germany. This guy, Christoph Bright, who goes by Infected Arts, drew the stippling one. The logo has evolved through every record. Like, I keep evolving this logo.
When was the actual first official bat show?
So we played our first show in April of 2014. We played our first three shows with Satan from the UK, which is one of my favorite bands.
That's awesome, yeah.
Russ and all those boys. Yeah, just a killer band. One of the only bands that's the same lineup that they were in 1984 that plays just as well, if not better, like, and still writes relevant heavy metal, speed metal songs like that. I always champion Satan. So we played our first shows with Satan. We played Philly, Richmond, Baltimore, and then we played the Tank Crimes Brain Squeeze, which is Scotty's festival out in Oakland. We flew right out and did 1, 2, 3, 4 shows in 2014. That's the first time Bat played live.
And you've always had you guys have a really good relationship with Scotty from Tank Crimes. The Toxic Holocaust split came through them, right? Toxic Waste.
Yep, that's on Tank Crimes. And Scotty would always get we always throw something to Scotty, do a tape version of Fatal Feast he got to do. And, we did just did this whole Brain Squeeze tour. Speaking of Brain Squeeze, with all Tank Crimes bands, Ghoul, Dead Heat, Necrot, who Bat's going out with Necrot next couple weeks. We both got records coming out.
So my first introduction to Bat was the Primitive Age demo. I think it was like some kind of, I think they came out with like a patch and a tape and you got a record. It was years ago, so I don't remember exactly what the whole package was.
Yeah.
But you guys actually record, like you said, you recorded that on analog tape.
Yep.
That record. And also Slasher Dave also helped out on that from Acid Witch and stuff.
He helped out on the album Wings of Chains. He did the intro too. So he didn't do anything on the demo. The demo is just the songs. Straightforward, but Slasher worked on Wings of Chains, and he actually did stuff on Ecstasy too. So yeah, no Slasher on the demo, but you're close.
And you did the video for Bat. You guys did the Beware of the Bat video, and that's the mask, right? That you still have that mask. That's the which is
yeah. If this was a video interview, usually I'd go get it and show it to you right now.
Yeah, no, we're the
you've seen it. So this is audio, obviously. We could describe it to you. It's based on the Wings of Chains character that the bat itself that Christoph did. And yeah, Margaret Roliski, who's in Guar, one of our closest friends, basically the fourth member of Bat, did the costume creature fabrication. And we made a 3D version of the bat from Wings of Chains. And so now I have this mask as a reference that I show every artist, because we want to keep it as like our Snaggletooth, as our mascot, the same, 3D image of this bat character. And yeah, we got to use it in a video we filmed in Evergreen Cemetery, which is like this overgrown Richmond cemetery that had an open mausoleum, and the bat's actually popping out of a real grave. People were even in between us, people were hanging snakes in there and doing rituals and shit. Like, we'd go there and there'd always be some weird voodoo shit around. Some of the crypts are open, and we got the bat in there and just filmed it like guerrilla style DIY. My friend Jim Strammel, who actually I just worked with on the Street Banger video again. So yeah, a lot of Richmond love there for that bat video.
That's a great video. And we're actually going to play. So this is actually a song I wanted to ask you about. One of the songs I love off of the Wings album is Ritual Fool.
Yeah.
And yeah. So is that, so like there's the, what is it? There's a verse in that song. You bought a medallion cause you heard it was cool.
Cast a fake spell.
Cast a fake spell, your ritual fool. So is that, Is that song written about, like, just I'm trying to think of how to explain it, because it seems like it has to be a driven song. Like, it's about a, was there just like a specific person you were writing about, or is just in general? Because it just sounds like some people, like, you know, the in the you see these kind of characters. So when you read the lyrics, you could totally see the person you're talking about. Was this just something that you just kind of wrote?
It's one of these songs. So I wrote the lyrics before the music, which is one of the only ones, which I don't know if people realize that. And we kind of just wrote to it. It's funny, if you play the Wings of Chains version, I don't want to give too much away, but we just kind of made that song up in the studio, but I had lyrics ahead of time, so it's kind of, that's why we re-recorded it again for Ecstasy, because we, it had become a song after then. But the idea is just loose on a type of style that was getting oversaturated at the time, like more when it became more about theatrics and like cloaks and candles on stage, which we were calling ritual rock more than the song. It was just poking fun at that.
That's so, the image I got from it. So yeah.
And then we're calling it medallion rock back then, you know. And hey, guess what? I burned candles at home, and some medallions are cool, but I wanted to have a fucking diss track for what was going on at the time. I was just overseeing all this shit that was like, just get on with the fucking song, man. It's like all this fucking build up around nothing, you know. So it was just a diss song about that style that was coming out.
We're going to play that song now. This is Ritual Fool off the Wings of Chains record on 2016 on Hell's Headbangers. We'll be back on the Tampa Morgue right after this track. That was Ritual Fool from Bat. And you guys, so 2018, so Felix leaves the band. And the last release with him was the Ecstasy EP?
Yeah. We went down and we actually wrote the song Ecstasy with Chris, our current drummer. Because we were, you know, we'd always be playing in Virginia. I had a couple guys sit in on drums in Virginia just to keep me and Nick practicing, because, you know, doing a long distance relationship in a band with a drummer is tough, having him be in Texas, you know. And Felix is still great friends with myself and Nick, and he stepped down out of the band. Like, he had some really hard shit happen to him. His daughter got killed in a car accident, and then his house burned down, and he's struggled with a lot of different personal stuff. So he knew his head couldn't be in the band, like, financially, and just keep it going. So basically told us to get someone else, and we had already been kind of rocking with Chris, and still went to Texas and recorded their songs with Felix because, you know, we wanted to do a proper final recording with him. What's crazy is we did a song called Ice, and it snowed in Texas when we were recording Ice. When's it snow in Texas?
Yeah. When you the last time I think they had a lot of problems. Yeah. So that makes sense now. So you guys did that, and that's so basically Chris Marshall joined up 2018, right? He was pretty much
officially
in the band.
He was already playing with us in 2017, but he joined in 2018.
And how was the difference having all the same members in the same room for Back? Because you guys were writing, so you were basically sending the tracks to Felix, right, over in Texas?
Yeah, we'd send them, but he wouldn't do anything with them. It's like not the most computer savvy band. So yeah, I mean, he could learn his shit on the spot. I mean, Felix is a phenomenal drummer. We just relied on the fact that he could just pick things up really quick. So yeah, we weren't really writing from afar. We would just write it, show him, and hit the road. So yeah, Felix being out there made it a little difficult. It made it difficult to play shows too. We had to turn down a lot of shows. But yeah, Chris being in Richmond, being gung-ho and just a really diehard fucking punk rock drummer, like we just hit the ground running. Playing all in the same room made a big difference too.
Okay, we're going to talk about, obviously, Under the Crooked Claw. I'm just going to wrap up Municipal Waste really fast because you guys did put out the Slime and Punishment in 2017 on Nuclear Blast.
That's Nick joined for that record, too.
Yeah, Nick joined that. So that was the first album with two guitar players. Correct. Which, for you, how was that? Was that like, you know,
it was great. Open arms? Yeah, Nick's like the only guy that I would have wanted to play with. We were already playing together in other bands, and he's already friends. He played in Cannabis Corpse with Phil previously, and he's friends with Tony and Dave. It was just a no-brainer to have Nick be the fifth member that we never had. And it was, it pretty much was seamless getting him in the band at that point, you know, and we'd always clicked writing together. So, yeah, having two guitars, I haven't met anyone that said it sounds worse. It sounds better. You can do harmonies and leads. He's a fucking ripping lead player.
Yeah, he definitely plays
shit that
leads,
I never knew how to do.
And, you know, and Municipal, so we'll go to the last record now before we hop into the Bat. So the Electrified Brain, do you think this was pretty much the most heavy metal influence out of all the albums that kind of shone through on that one, on the 2022 release?
Well, I'm always pushing the heavy metal stuff in there, but I know that Municipal Waste is not a heavy metal band. We're just heavy metal fans. That's why I've always tried to do Immortal Avenger or Vulture, do some other stuff and not totally put it in Waste. But there's always, you know, there's always parts that'll make a nod. Like Demoralizer was a song that we had actually written before Nick was in the band, right before Slime and Punishment. And it just didn't click because I wrote a part that had a harmony in the beginning and I was one guitar trying to do it. It just didn't translate. So we resurrected that song, kind of rewrote it as a five piece, and the harmony got to sit the way it should. And I feel like that has like basic heavy metal elements. Iron Maiden, you hear that, you know, without a doubt in that track. But I mean, yes, there's always heavy metal parts. Sure, there's more maybe in this new record. I'm a fan, so yeah, why not?
Yeah, and you know, you guys also bought, we had him on the show, and we're big fans of Blaine Cook, and you also had Blaine Cook on the record on the song The Bite.
Yeah, Blaine has been a friend of the band since the early days, and you know, goes back to me and Tony being huge Accused fans. And we actually played with them probably in 2003 when they were still mostly the original lineup. Always wanted to get Blaine involved doing something. Yeah, and that was the time.
Okay, so we're gonna play that song right now. We're gonna play The Bite off of Electrified Brain from Municipal Waste off 2022. We're gonna come back and talk about Under the Crooked Claw that will be out on Nuclear Blast on May 17th. But this is now we're gonna play Municipal Waste. We're going to play The Bite from 2022 featuring Blaine Cook. We'll be back on the Tampa Morgue after this track.
Slide out down! To play the-
Okay, that was The Bite from Municipal Waste of Electrified Brain and for the 2022 release. Ryan, what is next for Municipal Waste since we're wrapping up the waste part of the show?
Well, we're going to Australia in July, which I'm really excited about. We haven't been there in over 10 years. It's like our favorite place to tour. I just love the people over there. So that actually starts right after Bat does the U.S. tour with Necrot. So that's back to back. And then we're going to Europe with Cannibal Corpse in the fall. So, yeah, we got a busy year.
You guys were killer. I saw you with Carcass in Tampa.
Oh, cool, man. Yeah, that was a fun tour, man.
Dude, Sacred Reich, I mean, the lineup couldn't have been any better. I mean, that was...
We think about that. yeah,
man, that was a great, great lineup. I'm glad I got to see it.
It's amazing to play with some of our favorite bands, man. It's awesome. I lost my headphone. Let me go into no headphone mode.
No problem.
Hear me? Is my voice coming through okay?
Yeah, you're good.
It just one just died, so yeah. There you go.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the new record that's coming out May 17th from Bat, Under the Crooked Claw. That'll be out on Nuclear Blast. So this album's been in the can for, what, 2 years now?
Yeah, we started writing it, you know, during the pandemic. So it's one of those things. It took forever to sign with the label and get artwork. And, you know, everything takes longer than you think. So we've been sitting on this for a while. But, you know, we're so happy to be able to finally have people hear it, you know, this Friday.
The artwork was done by two different people, Brandon Holt and Margaret Lesky, which you were mentioning earlier.
Released. Yeah, Brandon's the killer tattoo artist out of Minneapolis, and you know he's an amazing illustrator. And I had him do the inking, and Margaret, who designed the bat, actually painted on top of his inking. So yeah, it was a double combo for that.
And you also credit, so you, like you said, you had the time off from the pandemic, which was very rare for you, and that's actually one of the reasons the Bat album got done.
Yeah, we had the time, you know, like everything with these, even back in the Waste days, we'd be on the road so much that we'd be just cramming, writing and recording around touring. And, you know, the world stopped. It was a room with me, Chris, and Nick just cranking these songs out. And it was the first time we got to write with drums in the room, more or less, you know, as Bat. So I feel like the dynamics and transitions flowed a lot better through that. And we were just cranking songs out practice after practice, and I'd go home and write the lyrics that night. Like it was just the inspiration was flowing.
And you actually, the album starts out with the Italian composer Fabio Frizzi, and you actually met him at, what was it, Maryland Death Fest?
I saw him play at Maryland Death Fest, and I just wrote him, you know, telling him a good show, and he actually wrote me back, and we started a conversation, and I just went for it and asked him to do the intro, and the guy was so humble and cool, and I told him I just wanted it to sound like a vampire walked into the room, and that's what he got. That's that eerie scale and buildup that he does. Perfect setup for what's about to hit with Vampire Lore, the next song.
And the album cover, but that was inspired off of like old Italian comics, old horror comics?
Yeah, like old pulp comics. I just wanted that kind of eerie feel, you know, no pun intended. And something just, and it seems Italian too. So I was like, let's have an Italian composer do the intro. Yeah. I love old horror comics, the look to it. And it's the first color we ever did too. So it was a big deal, man. Big transition for Bat. And I wanted the Bat to be in action too. He's always been pretty dead on. And like I said earlier, like we used the mask as a 3D reference for the artist. So, I mean, the Bat is in attack mode in this one.
And do you handle all the lyrics for Bat?
Yeah. I wrote them all, and, you know, it's basically Nick is a riff master, and we fucking, it just comes out, man. The songs just fucking flowed out. I was joking, it's like a movie. It's like, oh, I got a riff? Cool. I got a beat. I got some lyrics. There's a song, you know. It was that easy when we got in the room together.
How excited are you to get this material out, man? You've been sitting on it for 2 years. I mean, you got to be really pumped.
I'm excited that you guys have heard it, you know, and people that I've talked to this week doing interviews, it's just cool that to hear feedback on it. You know, everything I do is secret, and it takes 2 years to fucking let anyone hear it. So it's like finally just refreshing to hear people's take on it. So I'd rather hear you guys talk about
it's
it.
For me,
I go to the gym at 5 a.m. So sometimes listening to music is either a plus or a minus because it's too early.
But, right, I feel but, that.
And I've heard a couple things that I had to go back and re-listen to because I'm like, no, I can't right now. But I put that on, and because right when Tony sent it to me, I put it in my VLC player on my phone, and I was like, holy shit. You know, but I'm a Waste fan, I was going to say, when you brought up Slime and Punishment, the bass tone on that, I'm a bass player.
Cool.
It's the whole sound of that record is killer. And when I heard the bat, I was like, oh my God, this production is fucking incredible. And
the bass definitely stands out on this one in a good way.
Yeah. And as a bass player, I that's like you said, with the Geezer Butler, that's when I hear something. Man, when you hear it, you're like, okay. And you like Dirt on Your Bass. That even made me happier.
Big time.
I was a fuzz dude back in the early days. So trust me, the heavier, the better for the bass.
That makes me happy, man. I love
the lyrics, man. That's the only thing I wish they would do. I have to say, if I have any complaint to anybody, is with the promos that you get the lyrics. But the cool thing about
that is you can understand what I'm saying.
You can understand what Ryan's saying. The song Horror Vision, which is obviously about the Nasties, you know, back in the day, which I know about all that. The chorus is, what is it? Horror Visions, Video Nasty, Video Nasty, Splatter the Screen, you know, Persecution. Is it Burn the Tapes or Burn Your Tapes?
It's Prosecution and wait, you're stumping me on my own lyrics.
Happens to me all the time.
It's Horror Vision, Video Nasty, Splatter the Screen, Prosecution banning all tapes.
Okay, because I thought it was burnt. This is what. So I was, and not complaining to you, Ryan. I know you have to deal with it, but I'm a lyric guy, and you can understand pretty much. And that's one thing I think you're a fan of too, Ryan. Like, I audible like to lyrics. Understand yeah. audible yeah. lyrics. It's a big thing with me, you know. I mean, to me, it makes or breaks a song, because I do believe the one thing that, what was it, Alice Cooper said, where's the song? And to me, that's a big part of it, is understanding what's going on. And I know you're also into a lot of the old heavy metal, which with the vocals, you know, like we talk about Raven and stuff. Like, so one thing I love about this record is, and back from even the, you know, the Chains album, you can always understand the vocals. But that was Horror Visions is great, because you're mentioning, you mentioned what, 21 of the titles.
Yeah, I just reeled off 21 of the 70 some titles that were banned in the UK back in the day. And it's an idea that I had for a long time, and I just wanted to reel them off. And I put all the don'ts in a row, you know, don't go in the house, don't go in the woods, don't even go near the park, don't look in the basement, don't open the window.
Even mentions Tales of Terror.
Yeah. And Tales of Terror is actually one that's not a Video Nasty. Yeah. What's funny is I had Strange Behavior, the same syllables. You know that movie, Australian movie, Strange Behavior? But I was like, Strange Behavior! Just had it weird, so I just said Tales of Terror, because it's a great movie. So there were 22 Nasties, if you included Strange Behavior, but we got 21 in the lyrics, and it's just fun to reel them off, you know? And I was telling another interview, it's like when you ban stuff, it just makes kids want to watch it more. That's the whole thing. It's like
same thing as the PMRC stickers.
Oh, this is banned. I need to find every single one of these movies. So that's what it's about. You know, it's, you know, let's glamorize it.
Yeah. I mean, and the Final Strike, that was actually the last song you guys wrote for the record.
Yeah. And we were like, we needed a last song. And I basically let's do the Final Strike. It's got a lot of Iron Maiden influence in there. And there's a cannon shot even at one point. I don't think you really tell in the background. But, it was fun with Arthur doing this recording. I got to give a shout-out to Arthur Risk up in Philly.
I was going
to
mention him.
Killed the production, man. Yeah, I mean.
And he did synths on it too, you said, right?
Yeah, so Arthur did the Oz on the keyboards in Horror Vision. I kind of had this in the back of my head, what I wanted in the background, and he literally hit record, walked around the keyboard, did it on the first take, and walked back in and pressed stop. Like, Arthur's a wizard, man.
Yeah, well, we're actually going to play one of the tracks off the band's new record. We're going to under the Crooked Claw record, we're going to play Street Banger, and we'll come back on the show and say goodbye to Ryan after the show, wrap everything up. This is Street Banger off of Under the Crooked Claw, that will be out May 17th, and we'll be back on the Tampa Morgue after this song.
Arthur's in the asphalt, race fist in the air, raging hard rock, and we're banging our hair. Let the twin warriors and back alley crooks unite into
That was Street Banger from Bat. So you directed that video, right?
Yeah, more or less, walking around. It was like in our practice space, right? And there's like killer barbed wire fences right on the outside. And Jeff Howlett is like my really good friend, is a photographer, came up from North Carolina, who had shot photos for the album. So the album photos you'll see on Under the Crooked Claw, he did as well. And, you know, just guerrilla style, followed us with the camera. We went around a couple places in Richmond and just cut the video. And, yeah, real bare bones just to feature the band. Smashed a couple things on the way. Just made it up as we went along.
Was that the band space you guys were shooting in a lot of that? Or
yeah,
was it like just
that's the Bat space. Yeah, that's like – and I've been hanging up flyers and putting cool shit in the background for 2 years, so I finally get to have a little bit of that in the video. So
yeah, something the Bat scrims behind the drummer, which were killer. They're like these little – I don't know how –
yeah, those are like soundproofing things, and I put Bat screen prints on it. Margaret, who made the mask, made these sick axes for Ecstasy that we were going to put up – we were going to use for a music video, but then the pandemic happened, so we never did an Ecstasy video. So instead, we made a crest with the axes crossed up. She made another bat mold head, almost like a lion's head crest that's at the bottom. So behind me and Nick are these two crossed axes that Margaret Roliski made that got finally featured in a music video. So, yeah, everything's in there.
And you guys also recorded. So you guys did three videos. You guys recorded two in one day?
No, two in 2 days. Out in LA with Norman Cabrera, we did a video for Right for Exorcism, which is out, and then a video for Revenge of the Wolf, which will be out on Friday the 17th when the record comes out. But man, we learned our lesson. We're never going to try that again. Doing two music videos in 2 days. It already burns you out. You know, video stuff is a lot of wear and tear on the body and mind, but even just the time. We shot some of the band performance at 3 in the morning for Revenge of the Wolf. I went and did some pickup shots. I go back and forth to LA a lot, so I got to shoot some pickup shots. But man, Norman's a beast. Like, he's already the premier werewolf guy out in LA, and we had cool taxidermy we brought in, and the video's not out yet, but there's some pretty gnarly wolf action happening, so you'll see it.
Nice, looking forward to it, man. Like I said, the record's killer. I did notice one more thing on the Bassarized 4 song, so that. That, you know, you guys aren't, obviously you guys are pretty, a lot of horror and stuff like that, but that one seems to cut a little deeper to some of the social bullshit that we all saw the last couple of years. Is that, am I correct on that?
Yeah, you are correct. I mean, that was happening, and especially in Richmond, Virginia, we were out there protesting. You know, police brutality is an age old thing, and it hasn't gone away. And I wanted to speak on it, you know, on the side of the people for that. And, the systematic racism that we see in Richmond, and we were tearing down monuments at the same time. And I was like, you know what? I want to write a realistic song, something that resonates. It's not just all horror. That's real life horror. So that's what Bastardized Force is.
Cool, man. You know, and like I said, dude, the record is definitely killer, man. And I know, like I said, when you first, we talked to you before you signed on tonight, we know you've been busy as shit promoting it. I mean, it's been pretty overwhelming to see even. So, you know, I'm sure you're ready. You know, you are. So you're a road dog, right? Like, you don't like too much time at home. Like, you're ready to pretty much get back out there. Because you've been – how long – now, I know you're always busy when you're at home. But how long have you been – you've been only home for, like, what, 2 weeks now?
Yeah, I mean, we were in South America. And then, I mean, it's just – I like to keep it nonstop. That way it's it seems normal, man. Like, I just have to stay on the move. It's I really wouldn't have it any other way. I didn't know I was doing a chronological from the beginning of the band. And that, it actually wears me out more talking about this stuff than doing it. But I really enjoy talking to you guys, man. And I can tell you do your homework, too. So it's cool.
Hey, man, trust we don't me, like to waste people's time. You know,
He got me last week. He went through my timeline. And
oh, so you know what it's like. That's
dude, I couldn't remember, like, date. You know, if you were to talk to me normal, I'd be like, oh yeah, it was 2008, 2010. But when you
on put, the spot,
oh my god, yeah. I'm going, wait, nope, gotta go back, nope, that's wrong, because I mean, you forget all that shit because it's been doing this forever.
Well,
I mean,
you know what it is, and Ryan, we're gonna, I know you've been here forever, so we're gonna get you out of here too, but like, I gotta say, what it is that for me, like, I grew up writing for print magazines back in the day, metal print magazines, and I've been in bands my whole life. And when I moved out to Eastern Europe, and then I was like, I didn't want to do a show like this, but I figured, I you know, I got kids now, I'm raising my kids. I love this kind of music, and I love horror movies. So we mix both on this show. But I just don't want to waste people's time. And when they come on, that's why I try not to deal with publicists too much, because sometimes you get a guy to like, he's got 15 minutes for a new album, which I understand. But for me, I want our show to be something that someone can come listen to in 10 years and learn something about the artist that was on there, because it's like liner notes. I always say that. To me, this, whoever we bring on here, it's like a, it's a history. I'm a big documentary guy, and I want whoever listens to this show to realize that there's so much more behind, because everyone thinks, you know, it's this big party lifestyle, but there's just so much to it. Like you talked about losing people, Ryan, like we're all getting older. We're a couple years older than you. I think you're like 42.
I'm 44.
I'm in my deep 40s. Ed's 97. So like, you know,
that's better than both of us.
Yeah, exactly. That's because at the gym at 5 o'clock
in the morning.
Working
out at five in the morning. Speed metal workout over there.
Fucking I'm in the 52. I'm in the fucking bus circle in 4 hours, you know? So, I mean, for me, I don't have time to do that. But no, I mean, you know, it's, the thing is, when we do this show, we really try to respect the artist too. Even though we kept you for a while, we like to like actually like I said, someone comes back in 10 years, they're going to learn something from the show. Because we don't do video, which we know people tell us we should do. We do keep it all in audio. But I watch a lot of interviews, and I've seen you do some interviews too. And sometimes it's a lot of them are cringeworthy. So, you know, and before
like
we go
– mine
no, I'm just like with people, like, and I got to ask you that, Ryan. What is, I know you hate to fucking hear the question. I'm not even going to ask you this. Don't worry. But what is the worst question is that you hear from people? Because I know,
what's
your favorite tour story?
What's the craziest thing you've done on tour? And we just started making up lies at this point. And that actually made it fun. You always, I've learned just to turn the question into what I want to talk about. And, yeah. You know, that's a little note for the kids starting out. Change the narrative.
What's your favorite topping on your pizza? I'm interested.
That's, some of the questions, you know, are pretty rough, but we try to make it a little different.
Crushed red peppers. I throw it on everything.
And hot sauce, which I do make. I do make hot sauce, Ryan. So if you ever want a bad hot sauce, fuck me. I grow fucking peppers by like, it's crazy.
Yeah, give me that Lithuanian spice, man.
Lithuanian spice. But yeah, man, we know you're busy, and we, like I said, dude, we appreciate you hanging out and taking the time to talk to us.
No, you guys are great, man. I knew this was going to be cool, and you know, that's why I dedicated my Sunday to it, and it's really cool that you care about the lineage. So I'm glad I could just reel it off, man. I've surprised myself on some of this stuff.
No, man, like I said, dude, we, you know, we really appreciate it. And look, the new album's killer. It's coming out on the 17th, so the videos are awesome too. Now, and I like, you guys are doing it right, man. You guys still keep it old school. The videos are still old school. And you know, a lot of people don't realize, I think, when Municipal Waste firstly came out, even back then was a weird time for those kind of bands. Like, you know, we had went through the 80s, you had the thrash metal scene, but when you guys came out, it wasn't so easy to get.
It
you
was,
guys really impressed how
it was
you guys
new metal. It was new metal central, yep. And I wanted to crush that shit. So
yeah, and you guys did it. What
now
you guys
that's
accomplished?
Classic rock. Now new metal's classic rock. So what are you gonna do? It's
we're
back,
just talking
baby.
About that. That's fucking.
Hey,
rough,
it's good enough for a laugh. Though, I'll tell you that much.
Yes. But yeah, Ryan, first of all, where can people find anything to do with Bat or Municipal Waste or Vulture, anything that you got, pages, anything you want to promote, man, go ahead and shoot it out.
Yeah, I mean, Bat is just Beware of Bat on Instagram. That's the one I look at the most. You know, Nuclear Blast is putting it out, so hopefully that'll be easy link just to get the under the crooked claw. If you want to post it up on the page, we'll shoot it over to you. Yeah, I appreciate talking to you guys, man. You guys are rad.
Cool, man. We appreciate you. And Ed, where can they find us at, all the listeners?
Apple, Spotify, anywhere there's a podcast. Follow us on Instagram because Facebook sucks.
That's pretty much where I'm at.
And thetampamorgue@gmail.com if you want to yell at us or send us questions like for some reason.
we'll read them.
Yeah, we will. Some of them are fucking stump me. So, yeah. Do it.
And we'll be back next week, guys, too, man. We have the next thing we have scheduled is we have Bloody F Mess from Bloody Mess and the Scabs June 15th, but we got to have plenty before that. And Ed'll be at Maryland Death Fest, but we'll be on before that. And again, Ryan, man, we appreciate you. We'll say goodbye to you when we click off here. And I saw the tour schedules go up. I know they're playing in Tampa. I should have the fucking date, but I don't have the Bat date
in June. Yeah, Bat and Necrod will be down there in end of June.
I saw it. Yep, I'll be there.
Yep.
Killer. See you there. You'll be on the guest list, man.
That'll be flashing you out front, man. So, yeah.
Wearing my assless chaps backwards, bro. It'll be fucking awesome.
Those big muscles, yeah.
Right on, buddy.
So Under the Crooked Claw, May 17th on Nuclear Blast. There'll also be a new video out that day. If you haven't seen the other videos, check them out. And Ryan, thanks again, man. We'll say goodbye to you when we click off here. Everybody else, thanks for listening to the Tampa Morgue. We'll be back next week. Watch Instagram for updates for the next guests, and we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.